the theater of the mind, the... What you said about television versus radio.
Radio is the most exciting form of theater that I believe in, that I know. Because you, the listener, are participating. You can't just listen. You have to participate. And that's the magic of radio drama. We project the words. We, the actors and the producers and the directors, try to give you the images. But unless you meet me halfway with what you have created in your own mind, you make the scenery, you dress the actors, you see them as you personally, individually, make them happen. And again, you have to participate. And it's the only medium where you have to be a part of all that's happening.
Are folks today willing to meet you halfway? We're always referring to the golden age of radio.
I get very upset when we talk about the golden age of radio. This is the golden age. The spoken word has never left us. Last year, audio tapes, audio cassettes, books that were read mainly, very little drama, were sold to the tune of $2 billion. People are listening again. They are not just viewing. But you have to become a participant. Yes, young people enjoy listening to you and becoming a participant in what we are projecting. The word is identification. I identify with the person, the voice, the character that is coming at me through my loudspeaker, through my earphones, or through my ears. And that's what makes radio drama so different and so vital.
Let's talk about Hyman Brown for a moment. You have a resume that would choke a horse as far as radio drama is concerned. You've worked with Lancaster, you mentioned.
Well.
Widmark, Mercedes McCambridge.
Agnes Moyer. We take Inner Sanctum Mysteries. When I started out with Inner Sanctum Mysteries, I had Boris Karloff. I had Peter Lorre. I had Claude Rains. I had Eddie G. Robinson. I had Agnes Moorehead, and of course, Mercedes McCambridge, Van Heflin. These were magic actors, and their voices and their particular personalities were absolutely identifiable in two words, three words. Like I said to you earlier, this is London. Did I need any more in 1938 or 39 to tell me that we were on the brink of World War II? This is London. And I still get a cold chill when I hear Edward Murrow's voice say that. Now, radio itself, I came to radio right out of college, while I was at school I was doing radio. That was when I began with Dick Tracy. I began with Terry and the Pirates. Then came Grand Central Station. Then came the daytime romances. They were not called soap operas. They were called daytime romances. Anne Ashenhurst and her sponsors. Later, when all the soap people took it over, they became soap operas. I did a series for 14 years called Joyce Jordan. Girl intern, then she became Joyce Jordan, MD. All the new doctor series, ER on NBC and Hope on CBS. I was doing doctor stories in 1935. Hilda Hope. Dr. Hilda Hope, an actress called Serena Royal, who's nowhere with us. I did a series called Doctor Friendly. Big deal. They're doing, and the doctor stories are always standard.
So how do you feel about tonight? How do you feel about the Countess and being back at college?
Well, I love it. I think it's wonderful to bring young people who are in the School of Journalism. To me, I feel like I'm an adjunct, even though I am not, to the University of Georgia. We have the Hyman Brown Audio Production Center here, which are a series of small studios where I work often with the students and try to recreate what the spoken word can do, what pauses can be like, what relationships on mic between two actors and three actors can be like. I feel that an actor is less an actor who hasn't had the experience of radio drama.
What do you hope to accomplish tonight? You'll have an audience in here, you'll have a full theater. What's your goal?
My goal is to say to them, remember, to those who do remember. You told me you remember. John Holliman said to me, as he will when we were on the air, when he was 8 years, 9 years old, his father bought him a tiny little set in the form of a Coca-Cola bottle. And he attach the antenna to the so he could bring in Inner Sanctum. And they thought he was asleep, and here he was with the little loudspeaker tuned way down so that he could hear Inner Sanctum Mysteries. I hope to accomplish a resurgence which is in the making of the spoken word. I've even said it's not radio drama, it's audio drama, just to kind of make it that much more palatable to a generation that speaks of audio and speaks of sound and all the things that go with it.
I remember my folks taking me to New York when I was a kid to a theater to see a radio drama. It happened to be The Lone Ranger, and I was shattered to find out that Trigger was a pair of plungers and a piano bench.
That's right. We'll get some dirt scattered on the piano bench. Yes, I did theater. We did Philip Morris Playhouse for many years in the Ed Sullivan Theater, which has now become Letterman's Place. We dress up in evening clothes, and I, as the producer, the director, would stand there and I'd give my cues with a cape or with the finest evening clothes, and the actors were all rigged to the teeth, and it would with stars and so on. We spoke of Orson Welles. He was then married on one of my shows to Rita Hayworth, and she didn't know, but there was a small part in that drama that night in which there was a taxicab driver. For about 3 minutes, she was in a car, part of the plot. And for the scenes that we did till we got on the air, I used an actor to play that. When we got on the air, Orson came on and played the taxicab driver and broke her up completely.
I'd like to wrap this up by having you tell me about Mercedes McCambridge, the woman that Orson Welles called the finest radio actress in the world. How do you feel? How does Hyman Brown feel about having Mercedes McCambridge back with him tonight?
It is like having my family once again. I feel that Mercedes is my sister. We came together in 1943. We are talking in 1994. Can you imagine 50 years ago we met, and for 50 years we've been together. Of course she went to Hollywood in the 50s, and of course she moved into theater and so on. But whenever I say let's do a radio show, she jumps. She came out of radio, and she came to New York, and I wouldn't dream of doing a radio show in the years before she went to do All the King's Men without having Mercy as part of the show.
What makes her so good?
God. You have to be born with this gift. And of course, sure, experience helps. But I think our talents are God-given talents. You come to it by training and by experience, but you don't become Yitzhak Perlman, or you don't become Heifetz or Pavarotti just by practice and by rehearsal. There is something that was given to you, which you then can build on.
Can you put your finger on this gift? Can you describe it?
Well, first, it's a voice. The voice of Orson Welles, the voice of Edward R. Murrow, the voice of anybody. And secondly, it is an innate value for words, for how words should be spoken, at what pace, at what speed, or the value of words. We all say the same thing differently. Now, saying that same thing to through the mouths and ears of different actors is a God-given gift. And then the ability to be able to pick a script up and read it the first time, that is a God-given gift. Sure, that comes with experience, but it is a tremendous skill that is a coordinated skill of the brain and the eye and the heart.
Forgive me, you seem to be a bit anxious about today and tonight. Even with your many years of experience, you get butterflies, you get nervous.
That never leaves you. Sure, I have 600 people tonight, and I do have butterflies because they're a brand new group of people whom I'm coordinating and getting to meet each other and giving me the ensemble I want. The sound effects become a part of the ensemble. The music cues that I've brought in, it all has to mesh. It all has to become one successful effort. I had the great joy a few months ago in Anaheim, California, for the AARP at their national convention to do an audio half-hour drama for 4,000 people. And it was incredible to feel those people out front, because they are cautioned not to make any sounds. I told them I didn't mind if they made any sounds, but
the magic of playing radio to that number of people, that does give you. I cannot have the control I would have in a studio control room under conditions which I create. In a theater, I have to accept what is here. So yes, I am nervous. I am very, very concerned, but happily concerned that this will say the University of Georgia, the Grady School of Mass Communication, is the best in the United States.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you. She is married to this son of a bitch. As a matter of fact, she thinks she is dead. I don't want to give that away.
Right.
But there is a scene
towards the end.
Which account. But her scenes with him when he mistreats her, and they have a child, a baby, and he's very coarse and cruel about the baby and about her. And how can she handle this man who is autocratic? Mm-hmm. I'm having all kinds of trouble with a funeral coach, which is carrying a dead woman.
I heard you this morning.
To get that kind of a scene, I need George Lucas with 22 guys, and that takes me 2 weeks to get it.
Yeah, right.
And I'm doing this in 30 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Perfectionist, right?
That's not perfectionist. Sure, you're a perfectionist too, but if you got a stomach aching, you got to have.
Sure.
I mean, nothing is. I'm sure you're a
perfectionist. Are we ready for her? Is she coming up?
Oh, we wouldn't be here.